Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody and welcome. Yes, we know it is Sunday. This is Beyond the Cover. I am John Robb, and I'm here with Jeff. Jeff, how you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for the change.
Yeah, we got changed a little bit, a little Sunday night. Tomorrow we can't do a show, so we thought we'd do a little abbreviated show tonight, a little 30 minutes. We're going to jump on here. Jeff's going to give us a couple book reviews. I don't have any book reviews because I've been doing a lot of writing. Jeff and I have some hopefully good announcements coming up for 2016 here on the show that hopefully you all will like. And then we're going to play, we did an interview with MJ Arledge and his book, Pop Goes the Weasel, called over from England, I believe he was at that day. And
yes,
we were talking about Pop Goes the Weasel, Eeny, Meeny, and some other good things. That's about 22 minutes long. So like I said, it's going to be an abbreviated show. So Jeff, let's just hit it right off with you and hit on your book review. We haven't done this in quite some time. So what do you got?
That's true. And it was nice to have MJ Arledge on the show, especially because we've been advertising Eeny Meeny on this show for quite a while. So it was
true.
Nice to finally get to talk to him. Yeah. I have two books that I have to recommend highly. And
okay.
The first one is an upcoming book called A Time of Departure. And it's by Douglas Schofield. And that's S-C-H-O-F-I-E-L-D.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically a debut mystery, and it's about a prosecutor in Florida who is given from a mysterious man basically all this wonderful access to materials, and it leads to evidence of a cold case that hasn't been solved in almost 30 years. And the guy who gives it to her, come to find out, is a retired police officer, and that case has haunted him forever. And then the more that she investigates it, the more she realizes that this officer knows more about her than she knows about herself. And it's creepy, strange, and when you finish the book, you go, holy cow, that was cool. And you immediately want to go back and start over again and see how it all fits together. It's an amazing job,
nice.
And it all works.
Nice.
And I don't want to spoil anything. I'm not spoiling anything by what I just told you. It's amazing.
Well, why don't you spoil something? No, I'm just telling you.
Yeah, no. So anyway, Time of Departure. Really good book. Put it on your wish lists and or on your library holds. Definitely worth it. And the other one I want to mention is, because you keep mentioning Star Wars, Star Trek, which is better, there's a new book out, and it's called
I heard that little dig, you little fucker. Go ahead.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you too, man. Dodgers suck. Anyway, the book is called The...
Oh, at least we made the playoffs, you Mariners bastard.
That's true. That's true. You did. Won't last very long,
okay,
though. Anyway.
Yeah.
This is called The Autobiography of James T. Kirk, The Story of Starfleet's Greatest Captain. And the author who actually compiled all this stuff was David Goodman. And if you're a fan of Star Trek, it's really fun sort of getting the perspective of his life aboard the Enterprise and his life through Starfleet Academy prior to prior to the show, I guess. And
okay.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. If I had, and actually there's some pictures, and they're really cool doctored photos courtesy of Photoshop and stuff that make you see his Academy certificate, you see him hanging out with his friends, the Academy, and things like that. It's a lot of fun. It's silly. The only complaint I have is that it relies so much on what you already know as a Star Trek fan that there's not much in terms of additions to that. So if you want...
So, So I'm going to play that. So I'm going to play dumb here because, well, and that's not really dumb because I'm not in the huge Star Trek world. So for someone who is in the huge Star Trek world, where would this kind of fit in a timeline? And would it kind of fit any place? Would it be fans of, I think they're, you know, like the Deep Space Nine, the New Generation, the old, you know, the Voyagers, all those different shows. Where would you kind of put this?
Oh, no, it's set during the time of the original series and prior to the original series. So it's his life. And
like
I said, my complaint is that it's too much reliance on that and stuff we already know from the original series, that there isn't much extra to give that little oomph and extra special.
Is it filling,
but is it still filling
a gap? Is it filling any kind of gap that was missed or anything? Because I know some of the new Star Wars books that are coming out are trying to bridge to the movie, of course, The Force Awakens. Is this trying to bridge anything, or is it just totally just out there just for fun?
It's totally out there just for fun. There's nothing bridged as far as I could tell.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
gotcha.
But it's fun. Gotcha. I recommend it.
That's cool.
But Time of Departure is the one I highly recommend.
Okay. And you saw The Martian, and you gave it, out of 5 stars, how many?
5 stars.
You were. So there you go.
It's one of those rare opportunities where you have a fantastic book and they made a great film version of it. It's so rare. It was so nice.
So since you read the book and now you've seen the movie, it's a very good comparable. The movie is very good comparable to the book. It's a good way to go, huh?
Absolutely. I highly recommend the movie as well. And reading the
book
if you haven't done that.
Well, I recommend Hotel Transylvania 2. And you don't really have to see the first one to know the second one, but I would recommend that. I think that's a great movie if you want to go take your kids. Put it this way, there's not any bodily function jokes, which is good. And I don't like, you know, when they do all that, so there's none of that in there. So it was just a good movie. I thought that was good, too. So that's why
I kind of got a kick out of the first one, so okay.
Yeah. If you like the first one, you like the second one. I mean, it was about the same as the second one. About the same kind of role, same kind of stuff. That was, you know, just cute, sit down. We saw it in 3D, and I love watching movies in 3D. So.
Saw The Martian in 3D.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, only way to go.
Wait, are you? Yeah, that's true. Well, are you out? Because I know you got a bolt. Are you out? And then I'll play the MJ Arledge interview.
Yeah, thanks for the shortened show, and look forward to having the Monday 2 weeks from now when we have John Land on the show.
John Land, yeah, that's always good when we have John Land. We better book about 2 hours for that show, but we'll fit him in.
It's true.
All right,
well,
all right,
take
Jeff,
care. Thanks,
man.
Everybody.
And you be out, and everybody, and here we go. Since Jeff's out, we're just going to jump right into it because I ain't going to keep talking. Here's the interview that we just did with MJ Arledge on Pop Goes the Weasel. It's the second book in his Colin Gray series, so make sure you check it out. And the first one was called Eeny Meeny, and the third one will be out too. And we kind of get into a lot of that stuff. So here you go, and enjoy.
So Jeff and I are here with a great interview. You've heard us talk about the book Eeny Meeny and Pop Goes the Weasel on the air. They were so gracious to advertise with us, and now we're able to talk with the author, Matthew Arledge. So Matthew, how you doing?
I'm very good. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
It's a thrill to have you.
Yeah, it's great to be able to talk with you. It's great to be able to bring, like what I call, because we do Across the Pond in the magazine, to be able to bring, you know, authors from the UK more into the United States and vice versa to kind of get that international feel. So I want to just jump right into your latest book here, Pop Goes the Weasel, which is number 2 in your series. And it came out in January, and then you have another one coming out, The Dollhouse, which is going to be out soon, and Eeny Meeny was the first one. So let's jump into Pop Goes the Weasel and give us a little bit about the book and exactly who is Helen Grace, your main character, main one you write.
So Helen Grace, DIA Detective Inspector Helen Grace, is the lead police officer in the series, which, as you said, started with Eeny Meeny and goes on and on. She lives and works in Southampton on the south coast of the UK, and she largely spends her life chasing serial killers. In Pop Goes the Weasel, she is hunting a serial-killing prostitute, a woman who seduces her clients, then kills them, then cuts out their heart and sends them to their family to expose them for what they are. And, you know, the book, in a way, was written in an attempt to gain some measure of revenge for all the prostitutes both in fiction and in real life, who've been targeted by violent men. And I thought it would be interesting in this novel if the prostitute got her own back for once.
I'm curious about something. Let's step back a couple steps here. You worked in television for a lot of really cool British shows. In fact, I'm starting to watch Silent Witness, for example.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, what made you, how'd you get involved in TV in the first place, and then what made you decide you wanted to start writing novels?
Well, I'd always wanted, ever since I was young, to be involved in screen work in some way, whether it's TV or film. And I sort of did my normal degree, then I went to film school. And I was the only person in film school who was interested in TV. Everyone else was interested in making their sort of interesting, introspective sort of short films that nobody saw. And I was interested in doing something that, you know, you had a lot of eyeballs on it. And so when I left film school, I started working in the soaps and gravitated towards producing, exec producing, and then writing. But mostly what I was doing was producing. And I knew I'd always wanted to write, but I thought, if I produced a screenplay, then in a way everyone would prejudge that, because every producer basically wants to fire the writers and write it themselves, and every producer thinks they're a writer, basically. So I thought it would be safer to write in a different industry altogether, somewhere where I was not known at all. So I wrote my first novel, and completely in secret, and nobody read it. I didn't even show it to my wife before I sort of sent it out to agents. And happily, that was Eeny Meeny, and it sort of took off from there. But it was, you know, actually, it's one of those things that I've sort of haven't really looked back since, just because I, you know, love writing these Helen Grace novels so much.
Well, how do you balance? I'm assuming you're still doing television stuff as well. How do you balance the two?
Yeah, I am. I'm writing, and I'm also sort of producing, and I pretty much just divide the week in terms of basically doing sort of 2 to 3 days screenwriting / producing, and then a couple of days novel writing. And to be honest, that's a sort of great luxury, because when I was writing Eeny Meeny, I was just basically writing around my day job, plus, you know, I've got two sort of small children, so I was still required for bath duty and bed duty and all that sort of stuff. So I was really writing my novels between about sort of 5 and 6:30 p.m. every evening. So now to sort of be able to commit myself full time to writing makes it a lot easier. And I mean, it's only by doing that that I can sort of produce two novels a year, which is what I'm doing at the moment.
Oh my goodness.
Now I have a quick question. What is it with British serial killers and not liking hookers? I just don't understand this. Is there something in the water over in England that there's just, you just don't like hookers for some reason? Is that kind of why the serial killers over there just like to take them as, you know, like to chop them up?
Well, you know, I mean, we're very uptight about sex over here, and I think that's probably one of the answers. I think that's why we sort of wreak such vengeance. But I think it's also the sort of, you know, the whole myth of Jack the Ripper and all of that stuff, I think, has such a sort of long tail, such a long legacy. And I think they're sort of often thought of as sort of easy victims in a way, because people don't necessarily find it as disturbing as if a young child killed or whatever it may be. So I think they're sort of just easy victims. But I think partly because the Jack the Ripper thing has never effectively been solved, I think people are always drawn to that sort of slightly murky terrain.
And that's what I was going to ask too. Because Jack the Ripper is such a famous, you know, real serial killer in England, do writers like yourself, whenever you're writing, you know, serial killer books and into this genre, do you always are in the shadow of that character? And is there kind of a way to kind of get out of that and really not have somebody say, oh, this is just like another Jack the Ripper book? Do you think that there'll become a time when maybe that will go away, and maybe the same thing like with a Sherlock Holmes or an Agatha Christie, great writers from the UK, where you guys are maybe trying to get out of the shadow a little bit and not become, you know, compared maybe to those writers or that specific guy?
Well, I mean, I think we'll always slightly be in the shadow because it's such a sort of powerful myth, and everybody's, you know, he's a superstar serial killer. Everybody's heard of him. But I think, you know, in a way, the way to sort of get out of it, I guess, is what I was trying to do in this book, is, you know, this is very much a modern book. And when I was researching it, I went to Southampton and I drove around the area where the prostitutes basically ply their trade. And the thing is that in Jack the Ripper stories and films, you know, it's incredibly sort of Victorian Gothic with the cobbled streets and the carriages and all that. And there's a sort of bizarre kind of glamour to it in a way. In the reality of prostitution in Southampton, for example, is it just takes place in an industrial estate, which is basically it's body shops, mechanics, that sort of thing during the day, but at night it all shuts down and there's just nobody around. So it's just a sort of very bleak, kind of dingy sort of place. And that's really where these girls go to get picked up. And it's so dangerous and so unglamorous and so sort of awful that in a way, I guess that's how I try to get around it, by just presenting it to some degree as sort of mundane and awful as it is. I should say I didn't drive too slowly when I was driving through that area, just in case I was picked up by the cops and had to explain to my wife why I was why I was there.
Research.
The research,
author,
darling.
Author
research.
Always research. Research.
It's always research. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, why did you pick her up? It's research. I was just talking to her. We just talked.
Exactly. Exactly. I just fell over and, you know.
I can't ever. Exactly. Well, what was her head doing in your lap? That was research.
Well, indeed. Let's move on.
Sure,
she's probably listening.
Yeah, I had to make sure I got the angle right on the, you know.
Exactly. Absolutely right. You sound like men after my own heart.
Well, you shouldn't mention own heart when you, you know, with your new book here. I'm just saying.
Very good.
I'm curious because, you know, there's this whole genre of serial killer novels and they seem to kind of, you know, want to one-up each other. Maybe it's with the gore or just the, you know, depravity of the killer itself. I'm wondering, is there sort of, how did you try to keep it original? But also, is there a sort of a line that you're not going to cross when it comes to the violence?
Yeah, I mean, I sort of, to answer the second part first, I mean, I don't really do kid violence because I think, even though obviously it happens all the time, it's, I don't know, for me, because I've got small kids, I don't know, there's a sort of weird thing that as soon as it comes on the news or anything, I sort of find it quite hard to listen to it. So I've sort of steered away from that because I think, you know, at the end of the days, you know, this is fiction, it's entertainment, it's, you know, and so I don't really want to sort of horrify people. In terms of the serial killer thing, you know, I think it's a genre that we're endlessly fascinated with because I think we basically just are interested in crime anyway because we're interested in why people commit acts that they know to be wrong or immoral. And I think, you know, that serial killers are the most sort of extreme end of the spectrum, so I think we're probably most fascinated by them. I mean, I think all I've tried to do is tell it in a sort of British way. British serial killers, I mean, there are some sort of fictional British serial killers that have been done, but actually these kind of serial killer thriller is really a sort of US genre, and you guys are brilliant at it. We're still sort of finding our way. So doing it in a British way is good, but also it's no spoiler to say that in the first book and the second book, both the serial killers are women, and that was something that I was sort of keen to explore because we've got such sort of strong visions of the Hannibal Lecter and a lot of the real-life male serial killers in our head. But, you know, they're very female-centric, my books, both in terms of the main character, the sort of sidekick, but also the women they're hunting. And I hope in that way and in a way that's the whole point of Pop Goes the Weasel, is that, you know, this time it's a female doing the killing, it's a prostitute doing the killing. So it's just a reversal of the stereotype.
Well, that actually, you're anticipating the next question I have, is why did you create a female main character and all these basic female characters, and you do it very well.
Thank
you. Why female?
Well, I think it's partly that I just sort of find women more interesting. Anyway, I think with my sort of groups of buddies, my male friends, I can pretty much tell 95% of the time what they're thinking and what they're going to say. I think women are sort of more complex and unpredictable in quite an interesting way. And I think, you know, also I think life is harder for women still. I think they have to sort of fight harder to get to the same place as men, and I think there is still a lot of sexism in the world, and I think that's useful for a fictional character. You want to throw as many rocks at them as you can. But also, just finally, I mean, I think it feels to me like it's the time of the woman in sort of great crime franchises, in that, whether it's sort of in books with the girl with the dragon tattoo, or whether it's in TV with, you know, The Killing, The Bridge, our own The Fall with Gillian Anderson. You know, it feels like a lot of the great sort of new crime fighters are women, and I think people, you know, that seems to be very kind of on trend at the moment, and that sort of suits me down to the ground.
Cool.
Now, what I want to know here is, because you've written so many books in such a short amount of time. I mean, you had the last book that came out not too long ago, And then all of a sudden, now Pop Goes the Weasel comes out. You have the next book coming out so fast. Was it geared to be that way, or was it just something, you know, that kind of happened? I mean, how'd you get so many? I mean, how'd you get these done so fast? I mean, that's like amazingly quick.
Well, it sort of, when I first sat down with Penguin, my publishers over here, I pitched them the first 7 novels in the Helen Gray series. I said, this is roughly how it works out. And I think they were sort of slightly surprised by that, because normally an author sort of finishes a book and collapses exhausted over the line and has no idea what the next one will be. But I really wanted to write a series. And I think that's just my television background, is that, there are interesting mini-series and stuff on TV, but actually it's the big series, obviously, that all the networks are interested in. And I knew that publishers were the same. So I sort of, I pitched that, and I think I used the F word, franchise, which their sort of eyes lit up at that point. I don't think it's sort of, I think we're often quite embarrassed in the UK to be commercial, to be sort of nakedly commercial. You know, I think the Americans are much better, and someone like James Patterson, who doesn't really give two hoots, you know, nevertheless what the critics would say, he just keeps producing fantastically successful and popular books. And so I guess my ambition in a small way was to try and be the kind of British James Patterson and really have a long-term vision for the character and produce books regularly. And I think the thing is with the books, seemingly, is that people read them very quickly. They tend to read my books in like a weekend, 2-3 days, whatever, because they are very fast paced. And then they say, when's the next one coming? And so I think if I can deliver them every 6 months, then hopefully we can sort of feed their appetite.
Well, that actually is a good question, because you basically have 4 books published over there, and we are only getting book 2 here.
Yeah.
When are we going to catch up with you in England, I guess, is the question.
Well, you guys are releasing, I mean, the NAL Barclay over there, they're releasing them every 4 months. So by next summer, the 4th one have been out. Our 5th one will have come out. Little Boy Blue is the 5th one will have come out here in March. So actually, I would say towards the end of next year, you guys are going to start catching up, and then I'll have to write even quicker, because I thought releasing them every 6 months was quite quick, but releasing them every 4 months, which is what they're doing in the States, is very aggressive, and I like it.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And now that you're kind of getting more into the U.S. crowd, which I know is an extremely hard thing to do for U.K. writers. I mean, I'm friends with Peter James. I mean, the guy's massively successful in Europe and whatnot. Comes to the United States, and he goes to a book signing, and he says he hears crickets, because, I mean, people really don't know who he is.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you see as the reason for maybe why some novels are attractive to U.S. readers and, you know, from the U.K.? And is there a difference between readers in the U.S. and the U.K. that you see when you get emails from fans on both, that, you know, depending on what they focus on and what interests them, and maybe that's probably a reason why some books are just not hitting it here in the U.S. but are really big in Europe?
I don't know. I mean, I think that's quite a hard one to answer. I haven't really noticed too many differences in what people pick up on. I think that they love the main character. I think they think Helen is an unusual and sort of complex character. And I think everybody around the world, whether, you know, here or in the States, or I've just discovered that I'm in the top 10 in Korea, which is quite cool. I presume they mean South Korea, not North Korea, but we'll find out. But everyone seems to sort of pick up on that character, so I think there is a sort of similarity in that. I mean, my view is that, you know, the UK is the home of whodunits and police procedurals. You know, that's, you know, we sort of invented the whodunit, whereas the Americans invented the thriller. And I think that perhaps there's a reason why these books have done well in America, is because they are that sort of thriller style. We don't really have anything much like that over here. You guys have always been the masters of that. And I was at a conference recently where Jeffrey Deaver was speaking, and he said it quite nicely, where he said a sort of, you know, a whodunit is about what happened in the past. A thriller is about what's going to happen. And it's that sort of relentless driving forward narrative with a sort of a ticking bomb or a serial killer or whatever it may be, which makes the solving of this crime incredibly urgent, because terrible things are going to happen if it doesn't. And I think it's that sort of high stakes thriller narrative, which, as I say, we don't do very much here, but I was really keen to do, and I hope that's why it plays well in the States. And it's interesting that I wasn't actually a massive crime buff before I started writing the books, but now I'm reading loads, and I'm discovering actually that it is people like Harlan Coben, James Patterson, and others that I'm probably most similar to in writing style, because what all the American novelists in that genre, in that area, do better than anybody else is that last line of a chapter. They hit it so hard that you have to read the next page. You have to find out what happens. And I sort of think, you know, that I find that incredibly inspiring when I read that, and it makes me want to sort of, you know, create my books in the same fashion.
I do have to ask about your characters, because your novels have a lot of dysfunctional characters, but yet there's sort of this optimism as well. Could you talk about that balance for me?
Well, I think, you know, readers don't want to be depressed, you know, so I hope that at the end of the, I think the last word in Pop Goes the Weasel is hope, and I think, you know, I always try and leave, you know, people with a little bit of hope and entertainment at the end, because I think, you know, ultimately that's the great sort of joy of crime fiction, is that you go into a very dark place, but at the end of the day, you know, good prevails and you come out the other side, and it's a sort of very powerful emotional message that. As far as the dysfunction goes, I mean, I think you just want to make your main characters' lives hard as possible, but I was very keen to avoid you know, alcohol problems or dysfunctional marriages or whatever, because I sort of thought I'd seen that a lot. So when I was creating Helen, you know, I think, I mean, I just read The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo and other books like that, and the character of Lisbeth Salander was very much in my head, because she was the first crime fighter, I guess, that I'd read, who was more interesting than the baddie she was chasing, with her sort of sexuality and her, the tattoos and the piercings, and she was a computer hacker, but she had a good moral core. So I wanted to try and create a sort of enjoyably dysfunctional character, but then sort of at the end of it all, wrap it up in a way that sort of didn't leave you too depressed. It was very interesting, actually, just as a side note to that, but when I finished Eeny Meeny, that the last chapter is very blunt. Basically, this terrible thing happens at the end, and then that's it, and it's the end. And I think I'd just read A Farewell to Arms by Hemingway, and I was so blown away by that book, particularly the very end chapter where he and his wife have gone on this amazing journey, and they've escaped to Switzerland, and they, you know, they're going to finally be happy together, and then she dies in childbirth, the end. And it's such a sort of kind of amazingly powerful and bleak ending that I thought I would try and mirror that with the Eeny Meeny. And actually, people found it quite troubling, because they wanted just that little uplift of hope at the end. They wanted a kind of couple of chapters epilogue just to bring you out of the darkness, as it were. So sort of since then, I've slightly changed the way I write, just so we have a little uplift at the end. So I tried to ape Hemingway, but it backfired. But there are worse things. There are worse things.
That's true.
I'm curious, since you have now found success with publishing, do you have advice for someone who would like to be successful in publishing as well?
I think, you know, what I always say to people over here is just to really think commercially. You know, I think lots of people have stories to tell and interesting things that have gone on in their lives, but you also have to sort of be aware of what books are actually selling, and particularly what genres of books. You know, things change all the time. We used to have, you know, chick lit over here, which was, you know, Will You Meet Mr. Right, all that sort of stuff. That sort of died pretty much now in favor of a different type of women's fiction, which is more emotionally complex, more about family, marriage, stuff like that. So that's moved on. And I think, you know, crime is a continually sort of popular genre. But lots of genres have sort of died out or fallen out of fashion. I think it's really important to see if you can tell your story in a genre that people, you know, that people will want to buy, simply because, you know, writing is maybe an art form or a craft, but publishing is a business, you know, and all these, you know, you go into Penguin or any of the big publishers and you see all the hundreds of people they employ and all their massive overheads and all the rest of it. They need to sell a lot of books to sort of create this big, keep this organization going. So they will be looking for series. They will be looking for series characters who can go on and on. So, you know, my main advice is always to try and plump for something that you think could be really commercial. And crime is a great genre in which to tell all sorts of stories, but it is a genre that people seem to be perpetually interested in.
I'll tell you what, Matthew, that is excellent advice, and hopefully people understand that that's exactly what it is, that it is a business. So, but hey, what I want to do is kind of give you the last word, while let everybody know, social media, website, the whole nine yards, where people can find you. Want to be able to let you have that last word. Do it up.
Okay, cool. Well, yeah. So Pop Goes the Weasel will come out in beginning of October, and you can find me, please do come and find me on Twitter at MJ Arledge, or I'm also on Facebook, MJ Arledge 2. So do come and say hello. I've had lots of fantastic chats with people in the States, and had a brilliant time visiting there recently, visiting Texas and Minnesota and New York, and it's always lovely to talk, so please come and say hi.
Minnesota, you missed it. You should have went in January, man.
Yeah.
You could have really experienced Minnesota.
Yeah, no, it's apparently it's lovely in January. It's peachy.
It is. It's nice and white.
Yes,
all the
indeed.
Green goes away. It changes colors. You know how fall leaves change? Yeah, Minnesota changes color, too. It goes from green to white because there's no all snow.
I'll book my ticket. Sounds cool.
All right. Hey, Matthew, we want to thank you, man, again, for so much for coming out. It's been wonderful and great, and thanks so much, and good luck. Can't wait to see what else is going on. Man, I don't know how you do it, but keep pumping them out.
I will try.
Can't
thank you so much for having
me.
Yeah, we will do. Hopefully we'll speak again.
And maybe we'll see you at Harrogate. We're going to be in Harrogate in July, so we'll come out there. We'll say hello.
Fantastic. Look forward to it.
Okay, good.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks
bye
so much.
Cheers. Bye.
So, again, everybody, there you go. That's MJ Arledge. Jeff is out. He has to roll, so I'm going to take us out now. Again, want to remind everybody, check out SuspenseRadioNetwork.com for more information on all the shows we got going on. You're going to have the Story Blender coming up this Friday, along with a new Crime and Science Radio on Saturday. So make sure you check everything that's happening. If you have any questions, of course, you can always email us here at editor@suspensemagazine.com. So until next time, everybody, like we always like to say, keep reading. Later.